Hello and welcome back to Not Just Paleo. I'm your host, Evan Brand. And I got to tell you, you're going to really enjoy today's episode. But I wanted to mention my free guides. If you have not gotten my free guides yet, Calm Your System, the Alkaline versus High Fat Diet Guide, and several others, then visit my website, notjustpaleo.com, and go up to the top of the menu bar. If you're on mobile, click the little hamburger-looking thing, and it'll open up the menu bar and click Must Have Guides. And you will join the newsletter where you get awesome stuff. I'm not a spammer of any kind. And you'll get access to my free guides. They've been one of the most helpful resources for everybody out there. And I'm happy to provide those for you at no cost. Some other offerings if you're new to the show. I do a lot of functional lab testing that's very helpful for identifying any imbalances in your hormones and things like that. And I'm actually not really doing any coaching without lab testing now because the guessing and checking method is just too laborious for me, and the lab testing has really accelerated the success rate in my protocols for people. So that's something you can find back at notjustpaleo.com as well, and free consultations are included with the lab test, so that way you actually know what to do and how to read the results. And then I have my two books, Stress Solutions and Rim Rehab, that you can check out there as well. So we're going to get right into the show with my buddy Dr. Justin. I hope you enjoy it, and I have some more message at the end for you. Today we're going to be talking about many things, but how can you shape your lifestyle? How can you shape your diet? How can you shape your supplement regimen for optimal performance? Now, we saw the recent article about Walgreens and Walmart and all of these different companies putting out supplements that were absolutely garbage. They had no active ingredients in them. And who knows how many hundreds of thousands of people out there are taking these supplements and they're wondering why they're not optimally performing. So we'll probably get into supplement quality a little bit too. But Dr. Justin, welcome.
Thanks, Evan. It's great to be here.
So how would you define optimal performance? I mean, if somebody's listening and like, well, I don't know. Am I optimal? Maybe. I mean, some days I feel okay. And other days I can't focus at all. How would you define optimal?
I would say optimal health is being able to perform at your highest level, physically, mentally, emotionally, being present in your relationships and being able to communicate with your wife, your spouse, your kids, being connected, to be able to live your passion through your work, right? If you're living your passion, you never have to work a day in your life. Three, you're nourishing your body, right? You're giving your body what it needs to function. With fuel, with macronutrients, with micronutrients, with sleep, with mindset, with meditation, with gratitude, right? These are like the fertilizer to build optimal health. And then from there, you can just work your genetics and your talent to its optimal level, right? You can have great relationships. You can produce well. You can perform well. Everything's just 10 times better, right? The more you're involved in living and you're noticing the pain and the brain fog and the symptoms versus fulfilling the actual experience, the more it takes away from life. So I want my patients to be engaged in the experience they're having, not in the symptoms they're having.
Oh, that's great. I mean, you speak it perfectly. If you're having these symptoms or your back hurts or your brain is fogged, you're trapped in your own head and you can't focus on the outside world. And definitely if you're somebody trying to improve the world, you can't focus on helping other people if you're messed up yourself.
Right. It's like you get a brand new Porsche, you're driving your Porsche, but your elbow's killing when you shift it from first gear to second, third to fourth. Even though you're in this great car, you saved up this money, you're having this great experience, but you're focused on your damn elbow that's hurting you. So that's kind of how life is, right? The more you're focused on the pain in this meat suit, right, in our body, the more it takes away from you experiencing life.
Yep. So let's talk first about diet. That's obviously the starting point for probably you and I both in our health practice. You can't have good brain function and you can't be happy if you don't have the raw materials input into the brain. So do you want to cover some of maybe the raw materials or some of the places that we derive some of these healthy brain chemicals from?
Yeah, so when we're looking at brain chemicals and performance, we have to outline our template. So I think the paleo template's a really good starting point. I like template because template takes away the dogma and the inflexibility that the word diet tends to put on, or I should say the label that people tend to put on what a diet is. So the template gives you the ability to adjust macronutrients, right? Protein, fats, carbs, supplementation, micronutrients, water, hydration, according to what your needs are. Right. And so the paleo template, in my opinion, is an anti-inflammatory, low toxin nutrient dense eating plan. I think we can all agree upon don't put toxins in your body, right? Make sure the foods you're eating are anti-inflammatory, right? Omega-6 fats, throw them out the window. Omega-6 inflammatory fats, especially refined vegetable oils. Again, the grains, a lot of the foods that are gut irritants. We want to stay away from that. And then looking at foods that are super nutrient dense, like liver, like high quality animal meats, like getting good supplements on top of the diet as well. So we want to make sure the diet, that template is number one, and then supplements are kind of layered on top of it because supplements are meant to supplement, not to replace, right? Supplements aren't called replacements, they're called supplements.
Yeah, that's great. And I did not know that probably maybe 6 years ago when I first started trying to build muscle and I was into bodybuilding. I was just eating probably garbage food, but I was taking a whey protein supplement. And I thought, oh, this is all it takes. You watch the commercials or you read the internet. Oh, it's the supplement that's giving this guy results. But in reality, the diet, the solid foundation there is really what you have to build upon.
Yeah, it's that old adage, man. You can't build chicken salad out of chicken shit. We got to have quality. We got to have real quality there. And my bias is towards a lower carb type of hydrate, a lower carb type of diet. Lower carb diet. I feel a lot of the people out there, they're getting exposed to a lot of refined carbohydrates, a lot of excess sugar, and they do better cutting the carbs out and really focusing on good fats, good proteins, and primarily getting their carbs from non-starchy vegetables, which are like your, you know, your green vegetables and such, and then maybe some low glycemic fruit. And then as they get better, then they can experiment with safe starches or carb cycle loading or cyclical ketogenic or doing a little carb night, carb backloading kind of gig. So that's kind of like my template. And then from there, once someone's at baseline and they're stable, then you can kind of see what works.
Yeah, that's a good point. And when it comes to performance, people think, and myself included, when I first started out into the kind of the health space, I had this idea that you had to have a bunch of carbohydrates in your diet to get energy. And if you wanted to make it in the gym, you better eat a huge bowl of, I don't know what it was at the time, probably rice-a-roni or pasta-roni or something garbage. And that's not true. You can perform at a high level with a good solid foundation of proteins and fats. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so proteins and fats are definitely the foundation. If you're active, right, I like at least 0.5 grams per pound of body weight to about 1 gram per pound of body weight. Okay. All proteins get broken down into amino acids, and these amino acids convert to the brain for all your brain chemicals, right? Serotonin, dopamine, GABA, and they're very satiating. So if you're not eating good quality proteins and fats, and for the most part, proteins and fats always come together in nature, at least proteins do. The only time you really get proteins by themselves is if you're doing protein powders or you're eating really lean proteins like chicken, boneless, skinless chicken breast, or you're doing like rabbit or something like that. For the most part, you're going to get fat with your proteins. You can also get fat by himself, right? You can get them in nuts and you can get them in avocado and coconut oil and butter. But when it comes to proteins, we want full fat proteins where you're actually having a whole food source that's not super lean. That does a couple of things. It stabilizes your blood sugar. It gives you building blocks for your muscle and your brain, right? Your brain's 70% cholesterol and fat. And it also sends satiating signals to your brain like peptide YY, adiponectin, cholecystic kinin, ghrelin, leptin. These are things that tell you you're full. So you tend to not overeat. You tend to have feel more satiated and better. And you're building up your actual brain chemicals too.
Yeah, and you hit on blood sugar, and you and I talk about this all the time off air. Blood sugar is so important for performance, but when people hear blood sugar, they think of is like their grandmother or their aunt or someone who's overweight and has type 2 diabetes. And blood sugar and understanding blood sugar, how it works, and keeping a healthy blood sugar is super important for athletes, entrepreneurs, business people. So let's talk about that kind of blood sugar roller coaster and how it really needs to be.
Yeah, so blood sugar is important because if your blood sugar is up and down like a roller coaster, it's going high in the morning or low in the afternoon, right? Your body has to spit out a whole bunch of insulin when it goes too high and then a whole bunch of cortisol and adrenaline when it goes too low. So we're on this pancreas adrenal kind of roller coaster. And that can be stressful on the body because your adrenal glands are your stress handling glands. People forget that sympathetic fight or flight feeling that you get if someone startles you. Well, that's that. We're having that on a micro level all day long. Right? You eat gluten, right? You're at work all day long. You're sitting in your commute, right? Your body's just spitting out adrenaline, catecholamines, cortisol, right? You're eating inflammatory foods, right? You're not getting enough vitamin D. Your diet's nutrient poor, even if it's a good diet, it may just be nutrient poor because the soil it was growing in is bad. So all these things are stressing out our body, and our adrenals are the primary glands that are being whipped to put out that stress hormone so we can overcome those stressors. Totally. So getting on the blood sugar thing, if our adrenals are being whipped all the time and then we have this second task over here saying stabilize your blood sugar and it's already been whipped six ways to Sunday over on the other side, it may have a harder time stabilizing blood sugar. So you can take stress off the adrenals by eating good proteins and fats with the right level of carbohydrate every 4 or 5 hours. That can make a big difference at taking the blood sugar stress off your adrenals.
Yeah, and intermittent fasting, it's definitely right for some people, but if you're a high executive, you're under extreme amounts of stress, maybe you're doing some butter coffee in the morning and you're just completely skipping breakfast, or maybe you feel like you're so full from your butter coffee that you're skipping lunch, you can really mess up that blood sugar and you can start have anxiety and brain fog. Talk about some of the other things that go wrong when your blood sugar is not in check.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of bulletproof intermittent fasting. I think it's great. The only downfall with it is that the fats and the ketones can really suppress your appetite so much, or people won't eat till 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they're screwing up their blood sugar. Their adrenals are whipped. And also, I mean, if you're only eating fats, right, all day, well, what about all the proteins? Now, what about all the nutrient-dense things that could be in your diet if you ate them at breakfast and lunch? So you're also missing out those other nutrients that could have been in those meals. So that's the problem. I think the bulletproof type of fasting is good. I do it one day per week. I choose one day to skip breakfast and have a later lunch. But I typically avoid my stressful days when I'm with patients 12 hours a day, or I'm doing podcasts and I have to be on my A game because I don't want to be whipping my adrenals. I'd rather have a nice 3 or 4 egg, you know, breakfast with some kale and some sauerkraut in my body first, stabilizing my blood sugar and having a good lunch as well, because I'm going to be more on because I'm getting more nutrients from those foods, and save the intermittent fasting days for the weekend when I'm a little bit more low key and relaxed.
I love it. That's what you call, if you guys like the term biohacker, Dr. Justin's the real deal here, because he's talking about something important that people may not even have in their realm of consciousness, that the timing of these lifestyle measures that you're doing is really important. If you are going to put yourself in a quote-unquote stressful situation, such as intermittent fasting, do it on a day when you have low stress, but don't do it on the day, your first day on the job or the day you have a big meeting, because you're going to be setting yourself up for some shaky hands and some shaky moods. So
exactly. Yeah. And I, you know, when I fast too, I'll even do about 20 or 30 grams of collagen in the morning. And I get it may not be considered a fast, but I do that because, well, I just want that little bit of stability in there. I want good hair, skin, and nails. So I'll put that in there too on days during the week. There'll be one day like this morning, right? I did beef protein, right? Hydrolyzed beef from grass-fed cows. And I did 20 grams of collagen from grass-fed cows with some water. So it was about 40 grams of protein. And I did bulletproof coffee. And I'll eat at 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Wow, I did a grass-fed whey that has collagen put into it sample out. There's a chocolate and there's a vanilla, and it's a 2-to-1 ratio of grass-fed whey to collagen. So I'm feeling pretty good, and I think
it's starting to
talk about collagen just a little bit, because I think it's starting to heal some stuff that I've had going on, and I've been sort of collagen deficient, so to speak.
Yeah, so collagen, typically they take it from the hide of the cow and they hydrolyze it with various acids and such. Basically, they're pre-digesting the proteins from the hide of the cow so that you can absorb them like automatically. There's very little digestion process that has to go into it. So when you look at the molecular structure of collagen, you know, based on what amino acids are actually in there, you're going to see a substantial high percentage of proline, hydroxyproline, and glycine. Glycine will be the highest. And that's kind of what's in bone broth, and that's why when they created the GAPS diet, Natasha Campbell McBride came up with that, and it really emphasized lots of bone broth, because the high amount of glycine is a really good precursor to glutathione for detoxification, but it's also very soothing for the gut lining. So when you get that good collagen, you're really emphasizing the glycine. That's going to be really helping the gut, and it's going to be helping to push glutathione pathways too.
That's great. So, I mean, if you happen to be an older person listening to this show, I'm guessing that you may be curious about where supplements come into play. We'll get more into supplements, but since we're on the topic of grass-fed whey, Dr. Justin, you would say this is an awesome way for people that are maybe, say, 60 and up to really supplement their life with a grass-fed whey and a collagen to really prevent that muscle breakdown and sort of that catabolic effect that happens when you get older and you just naturally have less glutathione.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the benefits of whey, they are one of the best protein, supplemental protein sources for glutathione, just because they're very, very high in sulfur amino acids. And what I mean by that is just go look at the breakdown of any whey protein, especially a good one. You're going to see high amounts of cysteine, high amounts of N-acetylcysteine, methionine, glutamine, glycine. These are all your sulfur precursors, and they feed phase two detoxification, which feed into glutathione production. And we need phase two amino acids. We need these sulfur-based amino acids to run our phase two cytochrome P450 oxidase pathways for detoxification.
And since we're kind of on the topic of that, we may want to mention where people go wrong. And when it comes to, say, aspirin or Tylenol supplementation or something like that, aren't you still interacting and messing up that detoxification pathway there when you're taking some of these NSAIDs?
Yeah, just go online, right? Just go to Google Scholar, type in NSAIDs and glutathione production, and you're going to see NSAIDs drop glutathione production significantly, right? So again, the more you can do to help feed glutathione, the better you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like for the first time in a year, I used ibuprofen last night. I was actually water skiing yesterday on Lake Travis, and I fell ear first into the water, and I thought I ruptured my eardrum. It was really bad. I cleaned it out with some colloidal silver and some hydrogen peroxide, 3%, and that got all the lake water out that was fermenting and creating almost a mini infection in just a few hours. Cleaned that out, and I did take about 1 to 2 ibuprofen just so I could sleep. Because at sleep, I felt like, if I'm up in pain or if I can go to sleep, I feel like I'd have more of a restful benefit with the sleep. But I woke up with no pain, and I was in good shape, and I was taking a homeopathic anti-inflammatory support for the pain, but the pain's all gone. But I was able to trade in the ibuprofen for a night of sleep. So I'll make those things, those decisions with the risk and reward analysis every now and then. But I always try to avoid it unless one of those situations happens. So I'm not a total zealot. I'll go that way. But I did make sure the ibuprofen I got was gluten-free, just so you know, because a lot of them do have gluten in them.
Yes, and you have had a diagnosis of Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune thyroid condition. And for people that don't know, when it comes to autoimmune conditions, multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis, you probably know those as a common autoimmune disease. You really have to be super diligent about keeping wheat or gluten in specific out of your diet, because if you were to take a typical low-quality supplement that has gluten in it, without you knowing, maybe it does, you could set off sort of a trigger, right?
Absolutely. Gluten is one of the biggest stimulators of zonulin, and zonulin's what unzips those tight junctions in the gut and allows a lot of the undigested food particles in your tummy to go into your bloodstream, which could trigger a cascade of inflammation.
And so if you're on a healing journey, then that's something you really got to be aware of, because even self-care products like shampoos and conditioners, a little bit off topic, but some of those can contain gluten as well. So just being diligent, I guess that kind of ties into lifestyle where we're transitioning, is every little thing, every piece of your life, the soaps, the shampoos, what you put on your body, what you put in your gut, all this stuff adds up, and it either adds or subtracts to your total overall health and your goal of optimal performance if that's where you're headed.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, if your template, right, that's why I like the word dietary template, is to be eating nutrient-dense, anti-inflammatory, low-toxin food. Let's say that you can deal with gluten okay. Now, I think 90% of the population can't, unless you're an HLA-DQ4 allele in your genetic typing. That's a specific genetic type. And supposedly, according to Ken Fine over at Intero Labs and some of the cutting-edge genetic testing research on gluten sensitivity, that allele – HLA-DQ4 is the only allele that can potentially handle gluten. So you have HLA-DQ2 and 8. These are our alleles for celiac. And then we have the subtype beta-1, alpha-1 allele. And those are more gluten-sensitive alleles. So we have alleles that are more gluten sensitivity-based and then some that are more celiac-based. And the only allele that's immune to the genetics of gluten sensitivity or celiac is the HLA-DQ4. Yeah, there's other detriments to gluten though, right? We have wheat germ agglutinin. right? We have the various lectin compounds, and also a lot of grains are refined in, they have added folic acid. They're fortified, right? And if you got an MTHFR SNP, which is 60% of the population, well, you'll be metabolizing that folic acid, some dangerous downstream metabolites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so let's talk about that a little bit. If people are like, what is he saying? This guy's speaking foreign language. So MTHFR, this is a genetic mutation that you can get. A lot of people may or may not be familiar with the 23andMe testing. So you can have a genetic test done there. And a lot of people, I haven't had mine done yet, but a lot of people will show up that they have this MTHFR genetic mutation. And basically, and you'll have to fill us in a little bit on this, basically your body is... it has some type of issue in processing part of the methylation cycle that helps you do many things, but when you are taking in a supplemental form of folic acid from cereal or refined grains like you're talking about, that can cause other more mood-related issues too, as far as I know.
Exactly. So this MTHFR, which is methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, it's a specific SNP. A SNP is a single nucleotide polymorphism, so it's a little kind of mutation. And if you have this SNP, you're going to have a hard time metabolizing folic acid into folate and then taking folate into an activated form of folate called MTHF, methyl tetrahydrofolate. Okay?
And you need that because why?
Well, folate's really important for lots of things. If you're a pregnant woman, building the nervous system. Right, you can get spina bifida or have neural tube defects, like you see kids in third world countries with the cleft palates. We need it for activating various genes. Again, methylation is important for mitochondrial function, energy production, blood sugar. Right, we have to methylate lots of things in our body, and if we don't have methyl groups, then we don't have folic acid. Then we're going to have a hard time. Folic acid, I mean folate, activated folate. See, I'm so trained to say folic acid. Folic acid, the synthetic version, but we really want the activated folate, either calcium folinic acid, or we want the LMTHF form that you're going to see in better quality supplements. You'll see in the back folate, natural folate brand, and you'll see like metfolinin, or you'll see quadrifolate, or you'll see calcium folinate. Those are the forms that you want. Those are the natural folate forms that metabolize downstream naturally, where the folic acid doesn't quite get there. 50% of people will shoot it downstream into potential cancer-causing metabolites.
Yeah, so at that point, you're not making – you may have issues with energy. You may have issues with mood disorders because your body is not as efficient as it needs to be with that sort of issue. And we all have genetic defects. That's why we're on planet Earth still. But – these could be messing up sort of your energy, like you mentioned, your mood. So if you haven't, then that may be a good opportunity where you can go get yourself tested online. It's really cheap and it's super, super helpful. I've seen a bunch of clients that have it done. I haven't had it done myself, but I'll get some updates pretty soon and let you guys know what I found, because there's something that pops up on everybody's testing and it's pretty interesting. Let's talk about lifestyle a little bit more.
I just want to touch one thing, if you don't mind,
yeah,
on that
sure.
back topic. I mean, I think it's important, but I think it's overrated to a certain degree, because one, if you're not eating grains and junk food that needs to be fortified, it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
And then also, if you're taking good quality supplements that have methylated B vitamins and activated folate, well, it doesn't really matter that much, right?
Yeah.
It only matters, in my opinion, when you're taking crappy supplements or you're eating crappy foods. And then I always run an organic acid test where we can run some of these pathways. We can run what's called a 4-aminoglutamate pathway. That's a pathway that actually looks at how you're methylating. We can look at methyl malonate, and these will look at how your body's handling B12, how it's handling folate, and then we can give, you know, different kinds of B12 and different kinds of methylated B vitamins and activated folate in their nutrient program to address that.
Yeah, let's talk about lifestyle a little bit, because I see so many people going so deep, but yet they haven't covered their bases.
Yes, I agree. And I think I see a lot of people bringing in their 23andMe and they get all these genetics things going on. But just step back, avoid toxic foods that are fortified in folic acid. Take a look at your supplements. Make sure you don't have added folic acid in them. Make sure your B vitamins are methylated, like you have a methyl cobalamin. It's a methylated B12, right? That's a good start right there. That's a good start. We're not throwing extra things down our metabolic pathways that can't be handled.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about stress, man. This is a big deal.
Yeah. So There's a term by conventional medicine called allostatic load. And again, conventional medicine likes to create this separate language so people that aren't in the medical field can't understand, can't follow it, right? But just my terminology is allostatic load. Replace that with stress bucket, because that's basically what it is. So you get this stress bucket. Imagine this metaphorical stress bucket right in front of you, and you're just like throwing, you're just shooting in, slam dunking in all the stressors in your life, right? You're throwing in kids, you're throwing in money, finances, you're throwing in, hey, I'm eating some gluten, you're throwing in blood sugar, I skip a couple of meals a week, I'm eating some gluten, maybe I have a gut infection because my tummy's got issues, maybe I have low stomach acid because I'm burping and belching, maybe I'm constipated, right? Maybe I'm not getting enough nutrients in my body. These are all stressors. So we're imagine that bucket in front of you, right, in your mind's eye, and that's starting to overflow. That's what allostatic load is, according to conventional medicine. It's this bucket where all these stressors are starting to accumulate, and when problems start to occur is when people have their buckets overflowing. And there's a genetic propensity to this, right? If you're familiar with the Pottinger Cat study, the health of your parents have an effect on you and your genetics. So if you're a Pottinger Cat kid where your parents weren't that healthy, and we should probably do a little precursor if people don't know what Pottinger Cats are, but essentially if your parents had bad diets and bad health, then you're going to have a higher propensity to have even worse health than they did, right? So that bucket, instead of being a good-sized bucket you buy at Home Depot, now it's maybe a smaller bucket. Right? It's a smaller bucket. And what a smaller bucket means is you can handle less stressors in your life. So that bucket becomes overburdened much faster than maybe your parents' bucket was.
Or even your friend. I mean, you could look at your friend. You could say, man, he's handling so much. He's multitasking. But yet, you know, I see a TV commercial comes on that has a cute dog and a cute baby, and I'm crying.
Yeah,
and people get made fun of, and they think that something's wrong with them. Your bucket may just be different sized. It may be a tiny bucket, and then your friend, he can work 24 hours a day and be fine.
Yeah, and just to kind of give people an outline, the whole Pottinger Cats issue was this physician in the 50s and 60s named Francis Marion Pottinger, and he did studies on cats. And he took groups of cats and fed them poor diets, unnatural diets, and then an abbreviation between super healthy, moderate healthy, and poor. And he basically looked at these cats' cellular structure afterwards by looking at their bones and looking at reproduction status and looking at coats and energy and social ability. And he found that the cats that were fed the poorest diet, within 3 to 4 generations, they weren't able to reproduce. Saw the cats that were in the middle, you start to see their hair go, you start to see social abilities get less and less, and you see the cats that were fed the most biologically appropriate diet just had the most energy, they were the most socially flexible, and they had the highest ability of, you know, highest quality of life.
Right.
By observation.
What's amazing about that is people, you got to look up, you know, this Pottinger's cats and start reading about this, because this was amazing. This was sort of in the early day of adrenal extracts, and kind of another piece of that puzzle is that he was cutting out the adrenal glands of these cats so that he could make some standardized extracts so we could have something like an adrenal supplement to give people that had tuberculosis, because it was hypothesized that people that had low adrenal function couldn't – they were the ones that were suffering from tuberculosis. And so when you get your adrenal glands removed, I mean, I don't know the best way to make an analogy for that. You're basically – you're taking your stress bucket away. You have no stress bucket now. And the recovery of these cats was minimal when they had poor diets, and for them it was like a really cooked diet, and they had sweetened condensed milk and things like that versus like a raw, what you would consider maybe a natural organic milk. Those were the cats that did great after getting their adrenal glands removed. So if you are in a situation where you feel like you've been at a disadvantage due to your family, oh, my mom gave me a small stress bucket. Well, you're okay, because we can do some of these lifestyle measures to make your stress bucket a little bigger, right?
Yeah, and there's one confounding variable in that study that I think a lot of people that will walk away from it and say, well, I got to eat all my food raw. There's one variable there. Cats don't make taurine, and taurine is a very heat-sensitive amino acid. So if you're cooking your cat's food and there isn't added taurine to it, that's where the cats have problems, because they do better with the raw, because the taurine's present in the raw, where if it's cooked, the taurine goes away. So in one of his groups, he cooked the food, and they had lesser health issues. Now, I don't think it's good to extrapolate that to us, because when we cook food, we tend to actually be able to extract a lot more of the nutrients better, because it's less work on our tummies to be able to extract it. And we can actually make some taurine in our bodies. It's not an essential amino acid.
Totally. Thanks for bringing that up, because a lot of people hear that real quickly and they're like, so what does that mean? I need to eat just tons of raw kale? Not necessarily. I do steamed broccoli and put a lot of my clients on steamed broccoli as opposed to raw, and digestion's improved, and I would assume that mineral absorption is improved too. Would you agree?
Yeah, and actually, if you look at the USDA site, if you look at steamed broccoli versus raw broccoli, the steamed broccoli actually has a higher nutrient level in it because you're able to extract more of the nutrients that were bound in the fiber. So the steaming actually breaks down that fiber so you have more access to nutrition.
Yeah, and we're not cows. We don't have four stomachs, so we don't have all day to just break down all of these raw plants into usable materials. So maybe you can have some raw stuff in your diet, but it definitely you shouldn't just be eating pounds and pounds and pounds of raw spinach by the handful, because you're probably shortchanging your benefits from that.
Absolutely. Take a look and see what you can do with raw. Take a look at your stools. Do you see undigested food particles in your stool? If you do, well, work on chewing it more. If that doesn't work, work on steaming it or sauteing it.
Mm-hmm.
And some fats too, because a lot of times you extract more nutrients with these veggies when you eat them with fats.
That's great. Man, so stress is huge, and since we're on this topic, I want to kind of talk about supplementation and where the role of smart supplementation plays into stress. In my opinion, stress in some form, whether it's dietary, sleep stress, work stress, finance, stress is like the biggest deal that I think makes or breaks people's health, and bad diet is a stress. So let's talk about, if you have some of these pieces into play, you're eating a good nutrient-dense diet, maybe you're walking out in nature, you're going skiing and getting water in your ear and things like that. Where do supplements play a role in helping you deal with life?
So supplements, I think, are really important to help your body be able to adapt to stress better, right? If you look at stress, it's not about dealing with the stress. It's about how you can adapt to the stress, right? So if I have a stressful day here, I'm going to go meditate for 15 minutes, right? And I'm going to do a workout that's going to not kill my adrenals. I'm not going to go run a marathon, but I'll choose about four or five movements that I do in a circuit form for about 20 or 30 minutes. I'll meditate today, and I'm going to make sure I eat a really good quality lunch and dinner here that supports me. And in the process, I'm going to be adding in high quality adaptogenic herbs to help my adrenals and my body deal with stress better. So there's a family of herbs that have adaptogenic qualities. And all that means is you have the ability to downshift or upshift according to stress. So if you have a high amount of stress and you're wired, you can kind of bring yourself down from that wired feeling back to balance. Or if you're low and you're feeling tired and depressed and lethargic, we can bring yourself back up. So we have these family of herbs that we can, and we'll talk about them in a second, that you can utilize to help your body adapt to stress. And these herbs are called adaptogens, which is a really, you know, quite fitting.
I love the word adaptogen. It's my favorite category of supplements that I've ever studied and played with in my entire life. And I've been feeling really good myself, man, since I've had a lot of transitory stuff going on in my life, just doing the 500 milligrams of the organic ashwagandha with breakfast.
Yeah.
And doing it with sort of like a late snack before I go to bed to help me sleep. I mean, I can't tell you how helpful it's been for me to recover.
It's huge.
It's nuts. I love the way you said downshift or upshift, because some days I need a downshift and some days I need an upshift. And the beauty of adaptogens is that these plants, I can't think of a better word to say, they know what to do to help the system regulate itself. And I've had both increased stress reduction, increased sleep quality, and increased cognitive function using these at different times of the day. So ashwagandha, there's my favorite. I know you enjoy it too. Let's talk about that and then maybe a couple others.
Yeah, ashwagandha or withania somnifera or Indian ginseng, right? There's a whole bunch of names for all these herbs. So they're all the same herb. We're talking one of those three, it's the same thing. So this herb is actually, it's Sanskrit for to impart the strength of the horse. So it's quite a nice, you know, description to that. I mean, come on, who doesn't want to be as strong as a horse, right? So it's really good. I look at my patient's stress profile, how they deal with stress, and I recommend an adaptogenic herb, either a broad spectrum or a single herb based on their stress profile. So I like ashwagandha for anyone that has anxiety or sleep issues. And anyone that has pituitary issues relating to TSH or thyroid, or thyroid conversion issues pertaining to T4 to T3, inactive thyroid hormone T4 to active thyroid hormone T3. And I'll make a recommendation of 1 gram to 2 grams a day of ashwagandha.
That's
great. And again, and this goes without saying for you, but I'm going to just echo it. Organic, high quality, tested, independently tested, super good quality. You do not want to buy the cheap stuff.
That's a great mention there, and definitely deserves being said, because you can put two bottles of what says ashwagandha on the label, and they probably are not going to have the same active ingredients, or they're not going to be extracted the same. You may just be making expensive urine at that point.
Yeah, and it's just like saying, hey, here's a hamburger, right? Well, I can have a hamburger from grass-fed organic meat versus McDonald's, right? It's not the same thing. Even though it looks the same from, you know, from bird's eye view, it's not the same thing.
Definitely. Well, what are some of your other favorites? I really have been enjoying Shijandra berry as well. I've just been doing some organic matcha tea and then taking a little bit of organic Shijandra berry powder extract and putting that in and mixing that up with a little bit of raw honey. I'll tell you, that's like my favorite way to start the day now.
Yeah, Shijandra berry is one of those top six adaptogens. So your big six are typically Eleuthero, okay? That's Siberian ginseng. Ashwagandha is Indian ginseng. You have rhodiola, okay? You have maca or Peruvian ginseng. You have Shijandra. And then you also have your American ginseng or your Panax ginseng. And then you also have your Korean or your red ginseng too. So those are your big five or six. So one of the products I'm using is a combination of all six right now. It's a blend of all six together.
How does it make you feel?
I mean, it's pretty good. It just helps me deal with stress. I mean, I kind of just go in there and just feel it out. I have literally a row of just Eleuthero, a row of just Rhodiola, a row of just Ashwagandha, and then a combo product. And I'll just go in and just kind of use my intuition of what I feel like I need that day.
So what did you take today?
Today I took the combo.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So just a nice broad spectrum to help you in different ways, to help this part of the nervous system, to help this part, maybe help out the thyroid a little bit, maybe help out the adrenals a little bit.
Yeah. And also based on my organic acid test, I have low precursors to a lot of my brain chemicals. So low vanillamandalate, low homovanillate, low 5-hydroxy and indoloacetate. Big words, all this just means is the neurochemicals, the amino acids that are making my serotonin and dopamine are on the lower side because I'm burning them up. So I'm just taking extra amino acids to help support that.
So would that be considered you're adding fuel? Is that what the adaptogens would be in this case, fuel to help produce those neurotransmitters, or is it something else like the spark plugs or something? What is that?
Well, that's a good question. So your adaptogens are going to help modulate your body's dealing with stress, okay, from a cortisol adrenaline perspective. They're also going to have an effect on the reuptake portals in the brain, in a sense. I mean, if you go look at some of these things, some of these are monoamine oxidase inhibitors. They can have effects on it. Again, the nice thing is if you give an herb, though, an herb tends to not be a drug-like effect, right? It tends to not force the body into one direction or the other. It tends to just bump it or give it a nudge in the right direction. That tends to be how it works.
So maybe if I'm trying to find a good car analogy, maybe it would be like the little fuel injector cleaner. Would that be a reasonable analogy?
Yeah, you could easily say that, absolutely. Or I would even say maybe like you have the little sensors on the car where you get a little too close, it starts beeping, beeping, beeping. It kind of gives you a little bit of extra awareness, that little extra support.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, cool. We got just a couple minutes left, but I wanted to give you a chance to give your information where people can get in touch with you, but also if you had any last words of wisdom or advice to kind of wrap this up. This has been a great, quick, boom, 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 do this, take care of yourself type of episode, and I've loved it.
Yeah. Well, me too, Evan. Thanks for having me on. And I think pick your adaptogenic herb. So quick run down the list. I like rhodiola as my natural kind of mood enhancer. Okay, like my ashwagandha, like I already mentioned. I like Eleuthero as kind of my vitalistic support for building muscle, a good immune tonic, and it really helps support DHEA levels. Okay, I like maca as my libido enhancer. Okay, and those are kind of your broad spectrum there. And then on top of that, make sure you get enough magnesium in your diet, a good natural calm or a good magnesium glycinate or magnesium malate in your diet. A couple hundred grams at night is going to be super helpful as well.
Milligrams.
And then I said micrograms. Yeah, so it's a couple hundred milligrams, exactly, up to maybe even a gram. I always push to bowel tolerance when you're dealing with magnesium. Get to full saturation so you know where you're at.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, if you want to be more specific, get some lab testing done. Get a good quality organic acid test or get a SpectraCell test. Know exactly what nutrients you need to add into your eating plan assuming diet's already dialed in. Don't buy any supplements until your diet's dialed in. If you get too many cooks in the kitchen, things get burned. So get the diet dialed in. Once that level's there, the food quality's high, you get your blood sugar good, you're kicking ass with sleeping, and then add the supplements on board next.
Yeah, because you can spend less money too and still get – I mean, I could get a pound of bison for $8.50 a pound, or I could get a bottle of supplements that's going to last $30 that may or may not help me if I had – something instead of that bison, some non-organic meat in my diet instead, I'd spend three times as much and get less healthy.
Exactly. And I think it's human nature. Once you feel good, it's like, well, what's next? How much better can I feel? It's that, you know, what's around the corner, right? The grass is always greener kind of mentality. What's next? I want to get better. Well, you know, what else can I do when you see that improvement? So it's kind of, it's an addictive thing. And I know you've been there. I've been there. I'm still there. It's like, what else can I do? What else? You know, I'm looking at doing the alpha brain thing up in Canada now. I'm like, what else can I do for my brain and my body?
Yep, definitely. Well, tell people where they can keep up with you. You put out a lot of great content outside of just talking with me here on the show.
Yeah, you can find me at justinhealth.com, justinhealth.com, as well as Fix Your Thyroid, which kind of is my site based on all things thyroid, and hopefully coming out with a book in the end of the summer to the end of the year on that topic, which I'm really excited about. And then also my podcast at Beyond Wellness Radio, beyondwellnessradio.com, where we kind of have awesome guests like yourself and experts like yourself on there. So you should just sign up just to listen to your interview alone.
Yeah, they could. They definitely could. Well, thanks for coming on today. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Evan. Appreciate it.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If I could talk about adaptogens on every single episode and make an entire podcast dedicated to it and you all would stick around and listen, I'd probably do it. I mean, they've played such a huge role in my life and just helping me feel good. I mean, I want you all to feel good, and you know, they can definitely be part of your protocol that helps you feel good. Like Dr. Justin mentioned, the organic acids test is a great test. I call it the best bang for your buck. If you were to get one lab test, I would probably say that the organic acid test is the one I would recommend, mostly because it doesn't require blood. You can complete it from the comfort of your own home, and then I can get the results and design a personalized protocol based off those results. Visit the website, notjustpaleo.com. Once you get there, up in the menu bar, if you're on mobile, you'll click the little, looks like a little hamburger patty, to open up the menu options. Just click lab test and coaching right there, and you can go through the process. You'll see a wide variety of tests that I've added over the past few weeks. I'm really ramping up the test available over there, from food sensitivity and allergy tests to some basic and more comprehensive adrenal tests that you may have heard me mention, to the organic acid test, gluten cross-reactivity foods test. I mean, there's so much stuff that you're going to be hearing about. But the organic acids test is on there, and you just go through the entire checkout process there. And basically, you get a piece of paper with the instructions and the kit sent to your door. You complete the test, you send it back in, I get the results, and then we go over your results together, and I create a specialized program and nutrient protocol for you. So that's all I got for you, and I'll talk to you next week. I hope you have a good one. Get outside, get some sunshine. Summertime is here. If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, then I lied, but have some fun. All right, take care. Bye-bye. He acts like it's all good, yeah, like everything's cool. Kiss her good night and then he leaves her. She doesn't have a clue that he's terrible news. Why I'm in the tire, got to watch out, girl. Don't wanna see her by her eyes out, girl. Cause I've been watching you.